You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? I'm Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way because you are listening to the movie show.
Good day!
What is up? This is the movie show.
On Active FM.
Right, you're on Active FM with...
myself, Ryan, and...
and myself, Sash.
Welcome.
Yes, welcome back to another fantastic show. Today we are going to be reviewing a movie that I don't think a lot of people have watched because I feel like what we're doing at the moment is watching movies that are seriously underrated. Like good, good movies that didn't get out there.
Yes, definitely. This movie was very interesting for me. I enjoyed it. Definitely, I was smiling by the end.
Right. So it is called Super 8. Now, when you hear the name, you're like, what? Super, like, are there 8 superheroes? What? But actually, the whole film, and this is one of the things that really drew me into wanting to watch it, is if you know film, you get what is called an 8mm. So that's the type of film. I'm correct, right?
Yes.
So 8mm. Now, in the film, you see there's these bunch of kids and they're making a movie, but they're doing it in the 70s. So it's set in the 70s. And as a result, back then, they didn't have digital, so they used film. So they're using film and they're trying to make this movie. And then there's this train crash, which causes them... Right, that train crash was
crazy.
Can
I just say, that sequence right there, I was just like... I was sitting back, my eyes open, I'm like, and I kept going, I'm like, what just happened? Whoa, and I got my headphones on.
Oh, yeah?
Like my Bluetooth,
so the sound was...
my Sony headphones. My wife even walked up in front of me, she's like talking to me, I'm like, just wait. Just wait. I'm like, wait, whoa. And I was just like, are they dead? So-and-so's dead. Wait, he's the only one left. And then, anyway.
And luckily there were people left.
It's a good sequence.
Yes, it is a very good sequence.
All of our listeners know that it's coming. I never knew it was coming.
No, but in the trailer, because I did watch the trailer before because I wanted to watch, you know when you want to watch a good movie, but then I stopped it. So I got to a point of the trailer where I was like, nope, okay, yeah, not going any further. We're watching it because I didn't want to spoil the rest of the movie for me. But they happen to be... at this train track when the crash happens, and this is no ordinary crash. There is something very peculiar about this crash. And then the whole story unfolds from there, and it's very cool. It's a very good film. It's called, I said, Super 8, and it was made in 2011, so it is 10 years. It's a decade old already.
I can't believe it.
Right, but it's a very, very good film. The budget for the film was $45 million, and they made... this is brilliant. They made $260.1 million. Their budget was 45. They made $260.1 million. Okay. So they did very, very well.
So maybe like on our side of the planet, we didn't know, I don't know where I was at this time.
Yeah, what we were doing in 2011.
But clearly this film didn't reach my ears or my interest at all.
Right.
Yeah.
So one of the things I picked up when I was doing research, and I actually watched a whole behind the scenes video. It was actually very nice. They made like, you know how with some films you get the behind the scenes footage, which is just like that B-roll camera in the distance, just that dude standing trying to get. It wasn't like that. They actually did almost documented the behind the scenes, and they started off with the casting. And in this movie, if you watch it, you'll see there's a whole lot of kids in the film, and approximately 5,000 children were auditioned for the main part. So they literally auditioned, and they said kids auditioned from all over, from different countries, some even sent in videos, etc., etc. And literally they searched and searched and searched for these kids. And one of the things that director JJ Abrams said is that he wanted kids who weren't like professional kid actors that like knew they were sure of themselves, and that he wanted more like fresh faces and like someone almost who's never done it before. And in fact, the main character, Who he's the actor's name is Joel Courtney. He plays Joe Lamb in the movie. This was his first audition and first film, actually. Yeah. Like, he even in that interview, they actually said you could see, like, this, it must have been overwhelming for him because he was the first. And the set was crazy. The set was insane. Literally, if I think as a child, if you were in the, in this movie, all your dreams came true. Like, all your childhood dreams. Just, like, it looked so fun to be on that set. And just all the kids working together. And I think J.J. Abrams is a very nice guy and a very nice director. Because he actually called the kids individually and said, I would really like to work with you. Would you like to be in the film? And obviously, the kids all went crazy. But it's amazing how, when they did the auditions, the main character, I think he, so Joel Courtney, I stand to be corrected, but I think he was called back for something like 8 callbacks. Something crazy. Like, imagine.
Yeah.
The child just kept coming back, and then they would run through lines, and they'd put him in the scene, and they said there was something about his, like, his face and his eyes and the way that he pulled, like, expressions that they thought, no, this is the kid. This is the kid for the job. But it was pretty cool to see, because the kids now, obviously now they've grown, so that most of them are in their 20s now. So, and a lot of them are still acting. So the female, there's a girl, she's the one girl amongst the guys. Her name is Ella Fanning. And if you recognize her, which I'm pretty sure you would, because she hasn't changed. She just got taller. Literally, her looks didn't change. She plays Aurora in Maleficent. So she's the Sleeping Beauty in Maleficent. She's
okay,
in Maleficent,
yes.
1 and 2. Yeah. That's where I know her from. I know she's been in other films, but I know her from there. But she was 12 years old when filming. She was actually younger. All the other boys were around the age of 14. She was the youngest, being 12. And she drove in the film. So her character drove a car in the film.
Yeah.
But she was 12. When they filmed, and obviously they can't make a 12-year-old drive a car. So what they actually did was, in her driving scenes, obviously it was also illegal for her to drive. So there was a person driving the car with a mini steering wheel in the back seat, and then she would be in the driver's seat driving the car, but it wasn't her driving. They actually got a mini steering wheel in the back seats for another person who could drive.
Wait, how did they do that? That's like some mechanical. I've seen usually in movies, they get the people on top of the car.
Yeah.
They like got this cage on, literally on the roof.
So, and they're driving the car.
Yeah.
That's weird. That's
yeah,
weird.
Like a cage on top, and then they're driving. Because obviously, if you look at the mechanics, it's easier for that steering shaft. For them to connect that up. But someone at the back, okay, I can imagine maybe under the seat. Yeah, that is weird. But anyway.
Right.
That's cool.
But I just thought that must, like, imagine you have a steering wheel in the front and that's backseat driving to the extreme.
Yeah. Do you want your mini steering wheel? I actually got the impression that she was older.
She
than
does.
The boys.
She does. And she was taller than most of them, I think.
Because the boys were like, what? You spoke to, what was her name? Alice, I think.
Yeah.
You spoke to Alice? You know, type of thing. And it's almost felt like she was this older.
But I think also what helps is, you know, there's the thing, girls do mature faster than, so do you get what I'm saying? Like,
no, I have no clue. What?
No, man, as in physically, girls mature fast. That's why girls will often be taller than guys in primary school.
What?
I don't know. I don't understand why you're fighting this, Ryan. This is a well-known fact. And then, like, halfway through high school, the guys just shoot up. Then, obviously, and girls stop growing earlier than guys. Ryan, come on, man. Come on. No? Okay, since Ryan...
So, this movie got 4.2.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, she was younger than the boys. She was 12 years old, and the boys were all 14. But they really clicked well. Like, you could see they all had fun on set. I think it also helped with the characters, because they were all a bunch of friends, you know, that were going on this adventure together. And at the end of the B-roll footage that I was watching, Shane, they actually did, like... Obviously, on the last day of shoot or whatever, They got Ella Fanning and Joel Courtney to like just speak and say thank you or whatever. And they, Ella Fanning actually like teared up, and even the other kids, like you could see they were so disappointed that the filming had come to an end. Like you could see they really, really enjoyed themselves. And in the film, there are bikes that they rode. Now, obviously, everything was set in the 70s. So it was all like older stuff and, you know, the designs and all of that. It was all back in the day. And J.J. Abrams actually gifted them with these bikes at the end of filming and said, we'd actually like to give you these bikes as a gift from us. And they were over the moon. But it really, it looked so much fun. Like the filming, what you thought it felt like. I thought it felt like a little bit like Stranger Things. I felt like it went down that, not exactly, but first of all, it was set in the 70s. Obviously, Stranger Things is set in the 80s, but you know, time-wise. Plus, it was a whole bunch of kids, and they were all friends.
And there
was
weird something, stuff going on.
There was weird. There were strange things going on. There was a girl, and yeah, and they rode bikes everywhere, and they communicated with bikes, like walkie-talkies and
two-way radios. Yeah,
yeah. So I thought it was very, very cool. Yeah.
This movie for me was like an updated, a 21st century version of E.T.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
And it actually was inspired by E.T. J.J. Abrams was inspired by E.T.
I almost got the impression watching the interviews that J.J. Abrams, that perhaps Steven Spielberg was maybe one of his like heroes. Because within the interview, obviously a lot of the crew, even the guy doing the score, like when they were younger, they actually filmed on Super 8s. They made their own personal movie. Like, it sounds like this seems to be the thing where a lot of movie makers start. Like, I know when I was small, when I was a kid, I used to make movies. And so for them, they had that same experience with the Super 8 feel. You know, even looking at the guy who did basically the music, the score. So J.J. Abrams, the director, for him, it looked like, like I said, his hero was Steven Spielberg. But even with, and he made a lot of reference with like E.T. and stuff like that. But even the guy who did the music and stuff, he referenced to the guy who does a lot of Steven Spielberg's music. And it even showed the one part where even he made films when he was younger.
Oh, yeah?
And it even showed, they showed some of the stuff.
Oh, serious?
I was like, actually, this is quite good. Like, also, these guys, I think that he redid his own version of E.T.
Oh, yeah?
Because you could see the guys on bikes and this, you know, this weird thing in the like carry basket of the, so it was quite interesting to see how everyone connected towards, you know, the whole E.T. thing, and something that Steven Spielberg has a trait of doing. If you look at all of his movies, and I think we spoke about this in Player One, where he loves directing and making films about kids who have to act as adults.
Yeah.
And in this film, you see a lot of, I mean, that boy, Charles, the director kid, that like just his personality.
That kid was cool.
I was just like, he's just like so all bossy and straightforward, right. And I was just like, this kid's such a, you know, like you can see he knows what he wants.
Yeah.
And something that was quite interesting with Joel, and I think it's the reason why they called him into it, because I think they made him play different expressions in each role, because what J.J. Abrams wanted was that he had. You know, usually a character can portray a specific emotion, you know, excited through the whole thing, upset, whatever. And apparently he wanted this character specifically to be someone who portrayed all sorts of emotions. And it's true, because he was funny. He was like very nervous around the girl. At the same time, he was very assuring about what he was doing. And it was like just, for me, if this was like a dessert... this dessert has many flavors. So it was really, really good. Yes, you definitely, Stranger Things, definitely.
Yeah.
But then obviously watching the interview between J.J. Abrams and, with the director and Spielberg, I was just like, man, this is like E.T. Like the whole aliens, and then the alien wants to go home.
Literally.
You see?
And there's kids.
Yeah.
On bikes.
Now, quite interesting. I don't know, have you ever watched, there's this guy on YouTube, and he often puts out these things, everything wrong with, and then the movie.
Yes, yeah.
Did you watch the one on this film?
I didn't.
Like, you almost think like, man, this movie's like terrible, but
It, obviously, I think in every movie, there's always things that you can't really think about.
No.
You know? So, and for me, there were specific things that was kind of weird. But for me, yeah.
It's a sci-fi film.
Yeah.
It's a sci-fi. If it's a sci-fi, you're going to have weird things. Just wrap your head around it and embrace it.
But, I mean, for example, it's things that don't really make sense. And for me, it's just a thing of, look, when you make a film, you can't think, I mean, you can think as much as you can about stuff, but you can't think about everything. But for me, like, just the whole experience of this film, I loved it. I enjoyed it.
It was very good. Yeah. So they were obviously the boys, and I just want to, I have like a little bit of trivia just on like the guys and behind the scenes. And there was one specific scene in the movie where the boys were sitting and waiting for Alice to pick them up. It's quite early on in the film, and they were supposed to just talk. However, J.J. Abrams heard the boys singing together between takes later on, and he reshot the scene featuring them singing My Sharona, which was so cool. It really was. That was a good call from his side. Like, the fact that he actually was like, no, we're redoing that, sing. Like, I think that was really cool. Yeah. And that also shows the fun that they actually had on set, that between takes and stuff like that, they were able to incorporate and improv and, you know, bring in stuff because they were having fun. And one of the things J.J. Abrams actually mentioned, he said it was nice that there weren't any method actors on set, because like with a method actor, what they'll do is they'll film, and then when you say cut, they'll go off into a corner, stay in character, stay by themselves. Whereas with this one, everyone like grouped together, and he said specifically for the kids, it was good because obviously he was dealing with kids for most of the film. Those were his main characters. So for the older people to just help out and, you know, be there, he said it was really, really good for the acting and everything that went on. And then during the filming, Riley Griffiths, who plays Choles in the film, played an April Fool's prank on director J.J. Abrams during filming. On the verge of crying, this is what he did. I told him I'd lost my script, lost it at a mall in LA, and somebody took it and it's online. And he totally fell for it. I think I might have been more scared than J.J. I was trembling. So he tried to, he kind of pulled a prank on himself. But how do you go up to a director? That is like the worst joke to put on a director. Like,
I'm just joking.
Imagine. Oh my goodness. Guys, don't do that to directors out there. Now, I think this is what you mentioned, Ryan. As teenagers, J.J. Abrams and his friend Matt Reeves, who was the director of Cloverfield and Let Me In, was hired by Steven Spielberg to restore some of his Super 8 home movies. So they were actually, when they were teenagers, hired by Spielberg. I think that's also why they're heavily inspired by Spielberg, because they almost were like mentored by him from a young age. And then Steven Spielberg, a producer of the production, was reportedly on set many times throughout the course of filming. J.J. Abrams and Spielberg have both gone and on record stating that the filming of this production was some of the most fun they have ever had on sets. And you could see, it was, I was watching and I was just like, man, I wish I was there just to be there to have, because you know, you'd like, that set looked so fun. They really said it was some of the most fun they've ever had before on a set. J.J. Abrams insisted that the train station scenes were actually shot at night outside instead of in a studio. So he actually made sure that whole train crash sequence was done outside and that they didn't do it in a studio.
Good call.
It was a good call. Now, speaking about Joel Courtney, who's the main character, he plays Joe Lamb. So in the summer of 2010, he actually visited his brother, who was an aspiring LA actor, and attended one of his brother's acting classes. He fell in love with acting and then auditioned for a TV commercial in LA and was urged by an acting coach to answer J.J. Abrams' casting call. And it wasn't eight. After 11, it was 11. 11 callbacks, he landed the role of Joel Lamb. So people, if they're calling you back, don't get discouraged. This poor child had to go to 11. I mean, imagine, like, the third time you're like, okay, I don't know if I'm going to get this because they keep calling me back. The seventh time you're like, they've called me back seven times now. They want. Do you get what I'm saying?
It like, must mean something if they call you back.
By the 11th time you're praying, you're just like, please don't say no, because that would really have sucked.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen with Joel Courtney. He's actually been in a couple movies after this.
Yeah, Joel Courtney is in a film. It's a Netflix film called The Kissing Booth. So now, when I watched this film, I recognized him, but I was like, who is this child? And I searched and I clicked. So if you've watched The Kissing Booth, you'll know, I don't know the character's name. It's the main character, her best friend. I'm getting his character's name now. He plays the role of Lee Flynn, who in The Kissing Booth is Al's best friend. But he does not look like he looked when he was a kid.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He's changed. Because I was like, he's that's him.
He's like all.
Yeah, no, he's changed a lot. Ella Fanning hasn't changed at all. She looks exactly the same. But he's changed quite a bit. But he has gone on to, he's now gone on to make a name for himself within the movie industry. So now J.J. Abrams, director. He's actually directed a lot of movies. He's directed a lot of Star Wars. He's directed Star Trek. He's directed a lot of the Mission Impossibles. So that's who we're working with here. That's the director we're working with here.
Yeah, that's our guy.
Mm-hmm. But he actually, so originally had two separate ideas for his follow-up to Mission Impossible 3. So this film was the film he made after he made Mission Impossible 3. He had two ideas, though. The first was a coming-of-age story, and the second was that there was an alien on the loose idea. And it was much later in development that he actually had the idea to combine the two together. So and that's exactly what this movie is. It's a coming-of-age story, and it's an alien on the loose.
Something interesting that I heard about the first shot, the first opening shot of the movie, was that actually didn't come out of the script. It was a random idea he had one day.
Really?
Yeah, where this camera's moving in on the sign and the guy comes up on a forklift type of thing and he changes the sign to, you know, so many days. He's like, I don't know where I'm going to use it, but I'm going to use that shot in one of my movies somewhere. and this was it.
Shame. Actually, that was one heck of a way to start a movie. Now that I think about it, it like pulled you and you were like, hectic.
It's quite weird, eh? Because to start a movie like this off with that, you can sort of understand why, because it sort of puts a more of a pivot point on obviously the death of the boy's mother.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, the death of the boy's mother is not the pivot point of the movie.
But at the same time, it is.
Yeah. And then at the end, like, he lets go of that thing, and that's like closure for me. Because yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you felt the same. I sort of felt like, okay, the alien goes, but what about, you know, the tragedy? And for me, that was like a it was weird, because I was sort of just like, okay, it goes with the alien, so what does that mean now?
Yeah, I was like, don't, this is like spoiler alert, but I was when he lets it go at the end, I was like, don't do that, no, leave it, just why would you do that?
Yeah, it just happened. I'm like, okay. I was just like, okay, right. To space.
For me, what I liked was the relationship with his father was restored, and the relationship with Alice and her father was restored. That for me was like, yeah, that ended nicely.
I liked the character of the girl's father.
Yeah.
Because usually in a movie like this, they can have someone who's like terribly horrible. And I didn't find him horrible.
No, he just...
I actually almost found him a bit like, I felt sorry for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, no,
I
was you just did feel sorry
and likable. But not like down dumps, sorry for you. Poor, you know, in the street, sorry for you. It was almost just like, oh, shame, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a good balance. Because I wasn't like, also like, yeah, but how dare you, you know, type of thing. There was just almost like this is just such a terrible, unforeseen circumstance, you know. The one thought that I did have is like, okay, let's say, all right, spoiler alert, I'll try and for those who have watched, let's say that guy, that her father did go to work that day. Who's to say the event would have happened the same? I mean, we don't even know what happened.
Yeah, it's true.
I wonder if they kept that closed down for a reason. You know, we just know that something smashed something.
It's unnecessary details. You know how sometimes with films, you don't have to give the full story. Do you get what I'm saying?
It's sometimes just there was an accident.
Yeah, that there was an accident. That's not the focus. This is the focus, but that happened, and you need to know that happened because
that's true.
It affects. So I think it was one of those. The script writers, you decide, is this worth putting in? Is it worth going into detail or not?
I see J.J. Abrams has actually written quite a few books, eh?
For real?
He's a book writer, this guy.
Oh, I did not know that.
Books, Star Trek, Countdown, Spider-Man, Bloodline, and then more.
And then more.
I'm clicking on more. Yeah, these are books that he's written. That's pretty interesting.
That is interesting. Never heard that before or never looked for that before.
It's quite a writer, yeah.
That's crazy. So within the film, it's obviously called Super 8, and the kids are filming with 8mm. That's what they're filming with now. The Super 8mm footage seen in the movie had to be shot in 16mm in order to give the visual effects team enough resolution to work with. Because, I mean, think about it. They actually had to add CG onto 16mm footage, which is crazy. And then what they did was they degraded it to resemble the results, to resemble Super 8mm footage. Wow. But I think that was nice. I enjoyed how they mixed the digital with the... I really enjoyed that. I thought
did you enjoy the credits?
Why can I not remember the credits now?
Did you watch the credits? Because they played the whole boys movie.
Oh, I missed it.
I also missed it. And then when I was doing my research, I came across that. Then I went back to the film and I watched the whole thing.
I'm going to watch the film.
Including the train wreck. The train wreck is in
for
there.
Real? No, how did I've got guys, go watch the credits.
And it's quite lengthy.
It must be. That's so cool. So there's a movie within the movie.
You see, which means that they would have, within the production of this movie, they would have had had the filming of that movie, like you said, on 16mm, and someone would have had to edit it as well.
That's crazy. I need to go watch that. I'm going to do that straight after the show. Sure. Now, this is J.J. Abrams' first original feature film since it isn't a sequel or a reboot from another franchise. So, J.J. Abrams, we know he's done Mission Impossible, he's done Star Trek, Star Wars, and a whole lot of other films. But this film, Super 8, was his first original feature film. So, in other words, it wasn't a spin-off, it wasn't a sequel, it wasn't based on something. It was an original idea of his. So, this was actually one of his, it was his first, and it's the only film directed by J.J. Abrams that Simon Pegg does not appear in any way. Simon Pegg is always in the Mission Impossibles.
Yes, right? That's right, yeah.
So this is the only film directed by J.J. Abrams
because
that Simon
Pegg... Because he's also in Star Trek as well. He's Scotty, isn't he?
I actually have not watched
Star
Trek.
I think he is. Is it? Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm just looking at his face and then I connected. Oh, yeah, I remember seeing him in Star Trek.
But that means he must be in Star Wars as well.
Let's find out.
Okay, Ryan's going to go find out. Now, as of 2020, this is the only movie directed by J.J. Abrams that is not to be part of an already established intellectual property / franchise like Mission Impossible, Star Trek, or Star Wars. So this film really was like it was a pivotal point or an original point in J.J. Abrams' career. Because he did something that he's never ever done before, which is pretty cool. So I think this must have been a passion project for him, because it was like, I want to do this, I'm going to do it. And you could see that he knew what he wanted, even from like the casting perspective. He knew what he wanted and he went for it, which is pretty cool.
Simon Pegg is in Star Wars The Force Awakens.
There we go. So this was the first film that Simon Pegg was not in with J.J. Abrams. I wonder how he felt. Wonder if he was upset with him afterwards.
I feel like going back and watching more of for the movie forward, but watching more of his movies.
Right.
I'm actually, like, I have seen the Force Awakens and the other Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Star Trek fan, but I'm actually interested to go because J.J. Abrams has a very, like I said, for me, I feel like he's Steven Spielberg's son.
No, definitely.
Following in his father's footsteps, so to speak. Did you know that his father was actually a television producer? I saw
For
that
real?
Somewhere. Yeah,
so makes sense. That's how you got into it.
You can kind of see, the connection.
And then just two last trivia facts. So J.J. Abrams had a cameo in the film. If you go to 1 hour, 8 minutes, and 15 seconds, you will see him dressed as a soldier coming out of the Jeep he is driving. So if you want to see J.J. Abrams in action, that is at 1 hour, 8 minutes, and 15 seconds of the film.
1 hour, 8 minutes, and 15 seconds.
Yes, you will see J.J. Abrams dressed as a soldier in a Jeep or coming out of a Jeep.
1 hour, 8 minutes, and 15 seconds.
Right now going to look at him coming out of a Jeep for his cameo. And then the last bit of trivia. So there's the creature. So at towards the end of the film, there's a creature that breathes, so the alien breathes on Joe's hair during the final scene. That was actually J.J. Abrams waving a large sheet of cardboard up and down in front of...
Wait, what?
So at the end of the film, there's a part where the alien is breathing on Joel, right?
Yes, I remember that. The close-up of Joel, right?
That breath was caused by J.J. Abrams standing with a big piece of cardboard blowing it at him so that it gave the wind effect.
That's like Christopher Nolan with his sound of him.
Yeah.
in Tenet.
Yeah. I feel like that's a good idea because fans are too noisy, but the cardboard will do the trick. So if you are a filmmaker out there and you need someone's hair to blow, cardboard is the thing to use.
That's actually very well thought of because if you think about it, obviously in the movie you see the alien and you see his big nostrils breathing. Mm. But obviously when they filmed, they didn't have the alien there.
Yeah, so actually, yeah, that's
actually
true.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah, because that could be like a big error in flip, man.
He needs to have big nostrils. You can't put his nostrils at the end. But we modeled this character for 6 months. Well, you need to put his nostrils in front. Then it's like a human's nose where the breath goes down. No, you need it up in front.
But his hair's not blowing. Damn it.
It is. Wait, go back. Look here. See, why do you think I did that? Did you not see?
Hello.
Yes. By the way, ILM did the CG for this. Let's think. E.T., ILM, do they have a connection? Go check it out.
Mm, and Star Wars?
Yeah, Star Wars and ILM are obviously, if you actually see their Star Wars posters throughout this film.
Yes.
So they say, well, that's what landed him to direct. Because they saw, oh, this guy, look at him. He's putting Star Wars. Oh, no better person than to use J.J. Abrams. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was very good. It's a very good film. It's one of those, it's an adventure film and it's not like, it's lighthearted, if I can put it like that. It's not a type of, do you get what I'm saying? It's not for this one's easy on your heart. You can watch it in peace. This is a feel good enjoy movie. It's one of those.
It actually is.
Yeah,
it actually is.
And the storyline's also pretty good because it wasn't very predictable. Like it wasn't, do you get what I'm saying?
No.
Like you sort of ish, but there's parts in the movie where you're just like, huh? Especially because they keep the alien hidden. They don't actually show. I think the alien was on screen for something like 3 minutes or something, or three times, or I saw something like that. It wasn't on screen a lot. So that whole suspense of what is it? What does it look like? Where is it?
Yeah. I think that keeps the genre of the film. Mm. Otherwise, they do say it's a sci-fi.
Yeah, it is a sci-fi.
Yeah, it doesn't. For me, this doesn't feel like it can be, but it's like right on the edge. Like right on the edge of sci-fi, it's not fully like Alien, and they don't go into detail about the alien and all of that stuff. So,
but the sets were crazy. They had tanks, they had explosions. Right. They literally, I don't know. There was obviously visual effects in it, but most of the stuff was there. It was crazy. The set was crazy, and also they said with the train sequence that actually was a lot of it was improvised. They didn't actually sit down and storyboard it. Like they actually just kind of went improv on it, but they did a very, very good job with that whole sequence. It was very good. So that is Super 8. Go and check it out. It's a very good movie.
I'm going to go watch The Force Awakens again and The Rise of Skywalker because those are the two films that J.J. Abrams
directed.
Yeah, 2015 and 2019.
I'm going to watch the film at the end of the film.
Oh, yes, there you
the
go.
The film in the credits.
There you go.
Because I'm just like, I want to see. Oh, that's so nice that they put his film in.
Yeah, it was quite nice.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's very cool. I want to check if the next Mission Impossible was directed by J.J. Abrams.
Mission Impossible 8.
Is it Mission Impossible 8?
I just saw next film.
No, isn't it 7? It's not. This one was directed by Christopher McQuarrie, but this one's coming out.
Yes.
2021.
I've got your upcoming movie, Mission Impossible 8. So that means that it's planned then.
Oh, JJ. Yeah. Oh, okay. So 7 he didn't do, but he's going to do 8.
They were like, ah, get him back.
Yeah.
No offense. What's his name?
Someone McQuarrie.
Yes, that one.
Christopher, I think. Or maybe he was doing something else and, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this has been Super 8 on the movie show right here on Active FM. And we are now going to say goodbye.
Yes. Are you ready? Should we count it down?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everyone, wave. In 3, 2, 1.
You ready?
Goodbye.
So from Sash and Ryan, peace
out. Until next week.
Enjoying the Active FM shows? Well, then catch us on Instagram at ActiveFM777.
FM, Facebook at ActiveFM/777, as well as YouTube at ActiveFM and our website at www.activefm.co.za.
Don't stop, don't hesitate, find, follow and enjoy us on all our different platforms. You don't want to miss out.